So I'm Jerica Godot, and I'm an assistant professor at Adelphi University in New York. And I'll be presenting today on disclosure. I think in the manual it says self-disclosure, but we changed that title. It's now disclosure of HIV seropositivity to community service providers as a path to household well-being. No relationship to disclose, yada, yada. So here's the agenda. So this the study I present today is actually part of a study that we conducted in Thika District and Nairobi area in 2010, the summer of 2010. And the reason we did the study was to look at human capital in families that are dealing with HIV and AIDS. So the question was, as a family, as a head of household, how do you transmit human capital to your children? What's working for you, what's not, and what are some of the gaps, and how could we fill those? So just a quick recap of what's happening in Kenya. We now have a prevalence rate of 6.2%. Now, in Thika District, where the study was conducted, in the mid-90s, that prevalence rate had hit 34%, but it's now down to 6.1. One in every nine households is affected in some way by HIV and AIDS, and of the households that are affected, three of every four, it's the head of household who has received a HIV positive diagnosis. Something else you might want to note is that we have approximately 1.1 million children, and that's approximately, who are either single, double orphaned by HIV and AIDS. So then the question is, what is the Kenyan government's response to all of this? So our first case was diagnosed in 1984. We said nothing about it until the 1990s when AIDS was finally declared a national disaster. And that's when the government started putting in programs and policies to remedy the situation. So what's happening now is that we have a multi-sectoral approach to dealing with HIV and AIDS, and what that means is that for most ministries in the government, they are all required to have some sort of policy that fits into their framework addressing HIV and AIDS. So that's not only the Ministry of Health and the Ministry of Public Health, we're also talking about the Ministry of Education, the Ministry of Tourism and Trade, Rural Development, Agriculture. So all the major ministries in Kenya currently are required to have some sort of policy within their framework that addresses HIV and AIDS. So how did we define disclosure in the study? We went with the WHO definition, which was pretty much in line with what our respondents were telling us, and that is the act undertaken by the infected individual or another party, which happened quite frequently within among our respondents, where they would say, I got this information or I got connected to this agency through my neighbor who knows about my status. So the act undertaken by the infected individual or another party of divulging said individual's serostatus with or without their consent. Now, again, for our respondents, most of the third parties that disclosed on their behalf did have consent. So real quick, reasons why people disclose: mental health, access to material resources, social supports, and barriers that are known in the literature, negative or ambivalent reactions to disclosure, and economic vulnerability. So let's look at the methods we used. This was a grounded theory study as proposed by Strauss and Corbin, and we interviewed 29 participants. So 10 parents who had received a HIV seropositive diagnosis, and those were heads of households, okay? And then 12 primary school children living in these households. And now for the parents and the primary school children, all that was a sample of convenience that we would get in contact with a community health worker or a social worker and then get in contact with these individuals. We also interviewed 7 key respondents. Now that was a purposive sample where we specifically reached out to specific key respondents who are either working directly with families impacted by HIV and AIDS or were responsible for creating writing policies or creating programs that impact these families. So what were we looking at? So it was a strength-based perspective we used to come up with the questions in the interview protocol. So basically asking families how they provide care to their children. So what's working for you? What isn't working? What are some of the gaps that you've noticed and how would you expect to remedy those gaps? Interviews are conducted in three languages. So the area that I'm talking about, central Kenya and around Nairobi area, a huge population, a huge Kikuyu population in that area, so Kikuyu, Kiswahili, and English. And oftentimes, interviews flowed in and out of through those three languages. So when you see some of the quotations, they sound a little bit bumbly. That's because we're trying to transition from one language to another. All interviews are for parents, children, and I think three of the key informants were audio taped, transcribed, and translated. And I went through and reconfirmed all the translations. And at times when I didn't agree with the translation company, would go back and forth for a while, and then eventually just decide to leave the word or the sentence that we couldn't agree on in its original language. Okay, so data triangulation, as I've said, I maintained a transparent audit trail, so a lot of journaling through the process, why I selected that family for interview, why that key informant was contacted, and basically the decisions that I was making in the field during the data collection process and also during the data analysis process. And so that means, again, a lot of memoing throughout the entire process, and that also helps when you're coding, going back and forth to kind of remind yourself or refresh your memory about who that parent was and what the situation was and where the interview was taking place. Okay, so let's look at what's emerging from these data. So people are disclosing to family, neighbors, friends, and agencies and providers. Now, when I talk about family, a lot of discussion was had about disclosing to children, not specifically to parents or siblings. I think one or two parents talked about that, but mainly in this particular study to children. Neighbors and friends were key because these are the neighbors and friends who then disclose on your behalf to an agency provider that they've come across or a service that they've heard of, and then finally to our agencies and providers. Now, what I will say about the agencies and providers is that we have what we would consider traditional service providers working with HIV and AIDS patients. That would be, for instance, our community health workers, our nurses, our hospitals. But what we found was that parents were disclosing to primary schools. Parents were disclosing to landlords. So agencies and providers who we have not traditionally thought of as being access points for some of these families. So, what support do they either receive or what support are they hoping to receive after disclosure? A lot of talk about informational support, especially when it comes to neighbors and friends. Psychological support from agencies and providers, so disclosing to local social workers or mental health providers. Now, the instrumental support was pretty interesting. So education, again, something we hadn't expected to see, that parents are disclosing specifically to get accommodations when it comes to their children's education, income generation programs, and institutional care. So reaching out to a CCI, a charitable children's institution, to see if they would be willing to take your child if it comes to a point where you cannot provide care for them. So today we're only focusing on agencies and providers, and let's start with the psychological support. So sources of stress, we know our stigma, labor market disruption. So some of our parents had to stop working because their doctors said, okay, that's enough, you can't do this anymore. Parenting stress that comes with it, and of course declining health. So peer support groups were identified as key reasons. I disclosed so I could get into that particular peer support because I know people going for mental health services and therapy sessions with local community mental health providers. I'm actually going to start with this particular quotation. And this is a key informant who runs a local agency that's based in a church, in the Catholic Church. And what she says is, it is a very difficult thing. The parent is not able to be the way he used to be before. It is a little bit difficult. It takes time for one to, those who come out to do very well, but those who have not yet come out, you see, the family will have a lot of depression, and if the parents are depressed, the children will be the same way. Okay, so that's a key informant talking about the role of disclosing in psychological support. And then what some of the parents say about being a part of these peer groups. Sometimes you leave home stressed, but when you get to the group and share with people, the stress goes away. So what's especially interesting about peer support groups is that at the very end or during the interview, the parents would say, you know, what would be really great is if we could come together as a group and start a micro enterprise project. So I thought that was very interesting that we already had these groups that were organized around mental health, but parents were also hoping that at a later date, with funding, with support, that they would then transition those groups into micro-enterprise groups. Let's look at instrumental support and start with educational accommodations, another reason that parents are disclosing. Now, this is a parent who's talking about disclosing to, this is her son's primary school. So in Kenya, we have two streams of education. We have the public school, which is free as of 2007, and then we have private education, which you pay out of pocket. It reached a time when there was no work for washing clothes and making tablecloths. The teacher sent this boy home. He stayed the whole term. Later on, I decided to go and disclose. When I talked to the teacher, she said, "I didn't know. Otherwise, if you could have told me, I would have favored the boy. Otherwise, let the boy be in school. The time you get money, even if you get 100 shillings, just bring, we subtract." Okay, so that's a parent who's going out of her way to disclose to her son's school about her situation. So this is someone else talking about a head teacher. Because they had the status, that is what I think made him, which is the headmaster, cool down a bit. But not every teacher. When you disclose, you don't tell every teacher. We went and talked to the head teacher. When there's something the girl is sent for, I call and tell the teacher, because of the situation, just give me time. Okay? So we're going to skip some of these and go straight to income-generating opportunities. I think I mentioned those, that parents were talking. So the reasons parents are disclosing, it's not just for the support they know they will be receiving, but also for support that they hope that they would organize themselves up to get. So this is a key informant who's talking about an empowerment program that they're currently running in the local neighborhood, targeting women who are HIV positive. And it's called the Women Empowerment Program, and where they do tailoring, and so that once they graduate, they're able to fend for themselves and their families. I don't know how we're doing on time. I have, tons of quotations.
You have about 2 minutes or 3 minutes.
Okay. So I'm just going to head, skip the CCIs, and now let's look at diverging attitudes about engaging formal assistance. So I've just talked about that families are disclosing so they can get access to assistance, but there seems to be divergent attitudes about how parents are in turn using the services available to them. Key informants talked about overuse of services or the dependency syndrome, if you want to call it that way. So there has been that dependency syndrome. They're dependent so much on the sponsor. So this is a key informant saying, in as much as they're disclosing and coming in for services, we think that these families are overusing the services they have available to them. On the other hand, let's look at what the parents are saying. We should show our sponsors that we too have a few things, you know. We as parents should help our children so when they are done, they can say, yes, I was assisted by a sponsor, but my mother also did some things for me. That is what I will say. And another parent saying, I just don't want to be sitting at home. If I had something to do to fill my time, that would be good as well. So we have those two diverging attitudes when it comes to service engagement. And when we thought about it and when we look at how funding services takes place in Kenya, we think that we might be underestimating what our households have to deal with. So of the 10 parents we interviewed, we know for a fact that 6 of them were providing care to non-biological children. So that is to grandchildren, to nieces, nephews, and parents. Okay. So real quick, the finding summaries, families have prolonged needs. HIV is now a chronic disease. So we do need to put in place services that take that into account. Parents are disclosing to multiple service sectors, resulting in varied forms of supports. Again, as I said, potential under assessment of household needs, and going back to the primary school, that these now seem to be key access points for some of our families. Okay, so what are we suggesting? What are the implications? Ensure assessments include felt responsibilities outside of the household. So when assessing a family's need, just don't focus on how many children, how many people live in your household, but also ask how many people outside of that household are you supporting. Create positions for school social workers. So unlike the U.S., Kenya does not have a position known as a school social worker who would then be able to connect that family to other services in the community. Explore innovative forms of service provision. This now we're thinking about long-term continuous care. So not just coming in on Thursdays for your food basket or having your fees paid one semester at a time, but we now need to start thinking about long-term continuous services. And expand asset-based assistance programs. Families are talking about this. They're talking about this in the context of these peer support groups. So that is something we probably need to start talking about. And probably then use existing peer support systems as a conduit or as an avenue for these services. So I know that was hurried, but do we have any questions?
Unfortunately, I think we need to go on to the next one since it's after 9:15.